Everybody, welcome back to another episode of The Periodic Table. This is the weekly science news show where, well, we talk about the hottest science news stories of the week. And are we experts by any means? Most of the time, absolutely not. But that's okay, because we're all learning together. This is one big virtual science classroom where, well, we start off the day knowing very little about some scientific topics, and then we end the day knowing somewhat more to significantly more, depending on your level of interest, how many Wikipedia rabbit holes you hop down into after this show. I don't know. That's between you and yourself. But it's not just about myself today. I am, of course, your host, Brandon Hanna. You might know me as a host formerly over at AfterBuzz TV or the Popcorn Talk Network, or you might also know me from the movie Trivia Schmodown. But what you might not know is that I'm also a mechanical engineer, and I have a huge passion for science and technology and all things... just science communication and education. That's what I'm all about. And am I doing this without my coffee this morning? Absolutely. That's why I'm probably super awkward. I'm just not just an awkward person. No, absolutely not. But you know who does have his life together? He is much more composed than me this morning. I know he is. And he's going to bring a level of professionalism to this show unseen before. He is a director. He is a writer. He is the creator of the Nerdcore and Cyclops films. It is Raul Alejandro Mendoza. Welcome to the show.
You are a dirty liar saying I'm more composed than you. You are just, you're a dirty liar, but what's up, man? Yeah. I'm all of those things that you said, except for the more composed, and I do not have my life as well put as you think.
Well, I think we can agree to disagree on that, but welcome to this show. Super excited to have you. You know, I have like this little spiel that I have to do at the beginning of every show. And sometimes I have these brain farts where I forget the order of like what I'm supposed to say. And then it just comes out weird. And then I just address it and make it super self-aware, because why not, right? Lean into it. But we're going to lean into a great show here today. We have a story about fossil footprints showing that humans have been in North America for actually more than 21,000 years, a new groundbreaking discovery that shows that human beings were walking around North America back in the Ice Age much further than we all initially thought. So that's going to be our main story for today. But we're also going to talk about synthetic trees and how they could tap underground water in areas in need of clean water, obviously. So a really cool story about technology there. And of course, we do have a special segment for you all here today, something that I'm calling the Periodic Table of Lies. And this is a little game where I'm going to provide Raul with a handful of different periodic table elements, and I want him to tell me if they're fake or made up, or if they're made up or real. And then we'll talk about them a little bit. We'll learn a little bit more about the periodic table today. On the periodic table. So I thought that'd be fun. What do you think, Raul? Are you excited for that segment?
Hell no, I'm not excited. You're about to have the worst outcome of that game, bro. Like, man, I'm not a science guy. Once upon a time I was. I did do a year of chemical engineering at my first university. Since then I decided to pursue the beauty of cinema instead. And I don't know none of this stuff. I barely even know how to discuss it. But at least with this first topic, I'll be able to, you know, go with you, because I love history. And this is basically history.
All right. There you go. Perfect. No, it's going to be a lot of fun. Trust me. I love having people on this show who don't really know that much about science, because there's more to learn. That's the way you got to look at it. There's more for both of us to learn. And so I think we should start learning right now and get into our first topic of the week. And it's about the fossil footprints showing humans in North America more than 21,000 years ago. And this one's coming from NBC News, and actually multiple news outlets have been picking this one up. But we're going with the NBC News article. I also have links in the description to the Science News article for this story. And of course, always have the links in the description for all the articles that we talk about on this show if you want to check it out for yourself. But they're actually referring to these fossil footprints as ghost tracks in White Sands National Park in New Mexico. And I guess scientists have known about them for quite some time. This article here says one scientist in particular knew about these ghost tracks in 2005 when the ground was wet enough. At a certain times of the year, the ghostly footprints would appear on the otherwise blank earth, only to disappear again when it dried out. And it wasn't until 10 years later in 2016 that scientists confirmed that the ghost tracks had been made by real people. And it's not, and it's only now that some of the ancient footprints at the White Sands National Park have been dated as the earliest in North America. So really interesting story. We're talking about, like it kind of says in the article headline here, 21,000 to possibly 23,000 years ago, which is several thousand years earlier than scientists once believed. And this could be a groundbreaking discovery where they're literally going to have to change textbooks if, you know, we can sit on this a little longer, get a little more evidence, get a little more confident in these findings. But I think it's kind of leaning in that direction, which I think is really, really fascinating. But Raul, you said that you are a history buff. What do you make of all of this? What were your overall impressions of this article?
Well, I feel like us as humans, we've always been interested in our origins, you know, whether that be, you know, what's it called, scientifically proven, or whether they're described in our theological beliefs. But I found this interesting because, you know, we've always been accustomed to the idea that, okay, the Ice Age happened, right? You know, we had the bridge from Siberia and to present day Alaska that would allow for the nomadic tribes to, you know, go across that bridge. They would eventually make their ways into the Americas and whatnot and whatnot. This was interesting because, you know, now they're saying like, no, this could have possibly happened like even years before, which makes you wonder, like, if it's years before the actual Ice Age, then how the hell did they get over here?
Yeah, I mean, it is, I guess, like, truly remarkable. And you know, like, going back to, like, knowing that there was a time where this land was wetlands and, you know, there was a lake and it's now just a complete desert. But, like, going back to the Ice Age in particular is super fascinating to me. It's really hard for me to visualize going back that far in time and thinking that there were human beings living back then, you know, living amongst woolly mammoths and stuff like that. I don't know, which there was another story that I almost went with about the possibility of cloning woolly mammoths. I know that's been a story that's been talked about for a long time now, but sidetrack, Raul, how would you feel about if they were able to bring back a woolly mammoth?
I don't know, man, because I recently, you know, had this conversation with a friend. We were like, oh, man, you know, like traveling to other continents, right? And I brought up the idea of Africa. And he was just going on how, like, we both of us would love to. But have you seen the insects that they have in Africa, bro? Them things are, like, huge. So I'm scared of those big-ass insects, woolly mammoths who are just as, like, big as that, bigger than that, and with big tusks and stuff. It's just, no. It's, they're a very frightful creatures.
And they're just like kind of like big fluffy elephants, right?
Yeah.
Elephants are cool.
But then again, most animals, you know, they look, what's it called? Most creatures, they look very scary at approaching them. But, you know, it's all about the respect given to them. And, you know, you won't. If you don't mess with them, you're not going to find out what's wrong with them. You know, except for snakes, man. I don't play with snakes.
You're like Indiana Jones.
Yeah, me and snakes do not want to have any sort of relationship with you. As long as you stay away from me, you're good.
Hey, Indiana Jones was an archaeologist. I mean, I could see you guys have a lot in common. You like history, you like archaeology.
More like historical events, man. Once upon a time, I based my studies of history in university around the Cold War. So that's what I know the best. But
okay. Yeah. Well, you know, archaeology really, it tells the story of historical events, right? You know, before finding these footprints, any traces of early human habitation had been completely disputed because all the data relied on stone tools that were found that might have formed naturally. They weren't sure, or they could have been artifacts that were originally in one location and moved to another location. And so I guess that's like a really tricky thing. So having all these footprints that are, I guess, like they feel like they're just kind of popping up, but they're not really popping up. They've always been there. We're just now kind of realizing that they're there. Something is that's much, much stronger evidence to kind of see these basically what appear to be like fossilized footprints in the sand. And I thought it was interesting. They made a point in the article to say that they were kind of the size of that you would expect of teenagers, because they were presumably in that area doing a lot of work that didn't require like a higher skill level, like hunting is the example that they give. So I thought that was interesting that they could like kind of decipher like, okay, these are footprints from teenagers and they're doing a certain type of work around this time period. And I thought that was particularly interesting. Was there any fact that kind of like stuck out to you in this article that made you go, oh wow, that's kind of cool?
Yeah. What's it called? It was specifically the one that you just brought up. I was going to bring up. What's it called? It's like teenagers and children outnumbered. Those footprints outnumbered those of the adults, which is kind of crazy, because you know you would think like, because it's always so hard to like think about, you know, that back in time and think about how, you know, children and teens were conditioned back then, because like now, unless you know, you are raised under different circumstances, I doubt that you'd be sent to hunt and gather, right? And do some of these things. Like, you know, we have chores now where we clean up the house, right? We wash the dishes. But like, imagine being sent out into the whatever known wilderness of this time period where you could get eaten by like woolly mammoths or like, you know, it's rather interesting because you think of like how different times were, and like when you had that necessity to have to use every person in the family, that meant sending every person in the family out to do the work.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. And I also, there's another thing that I found particularly fascinating was the technology, the ground penetrating radar that they were using to discover these footprints and knowing where to excavate to find even more footprints, I think is super cool. But the article also talks about how they were able to date these footprints, right? You see these footprints in the sand and like, how do you know that they're 23,000 years old? Like, and I always thought that to be particularly interesting, dating things that fossils and artifacts that you find and knowing what point in history that they're from. And it says here in the article that the footprints at White Sands were dated by examining the seeds of an aquatic plant that once thrived along the shores of the dried up lake, commonly known as ditch grass. And according to the research published in the journal Science, the ancient ditch grass seeds were found in layers of hard earth, both above and below the many human footprints at the site. And they radiocarbon dated to determine their age, which I think I've always found like carbon dating and using like, you know, you can like when you're like in like the Arctic, basically, you can like look at like ice tubes and figure out by like the bubbles of the gas inside what point of history you're looking at. Stuff like that I always found super cool. Important to just, I don't know, be able to accurately date things and to get a better glimpse at our history, I think is.
I have no idea what carbon dating is. I know I learned it at one point and I don't remember what that is at all.
No, for sure. You know, like I obviously like I know about it. I'm somewhat familiar with it. But if you ask me to explain specifically how they do it, I can't tell you. So you know what? I think I think I should give both of us a homework assignment after this show to go back and learn a little bit more about carbon dating. How it's done. I think we should do that.
Still really interesting, and that's it's huge because, like you said, this is what's going to rewrite textbooks. And it was just like I believe, like I would think I was like in senior year of high school when that one picture of like the cell, the cancer cell separating from a regular cell came out, and my teacher was like, "This is what's going to update textbooks, y'all." And I'm like, "Oh, okay." It's like I don't really know what this is, but yeah, okay.
Yeah, super cool. So give me that book report on carbon dating, same time next week.
And, yeah.
I'll go easy on you with the grading.
Yes. Yeah. You're the one who helped me on my geology homework last semester, so I don't know what you're expecting from me.
wasn't that, that was a math problem though, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's my thing. Math and physics, you know?
Yeah.
That's my main, that's my bread and butter. You know, that's my jam. Yeah. But yeah, so guys, really interesting article. Check it out. And if you also want to learn more about carbon dating, I challenge you to get in on our homework assignment. So I'm forgetting how to segue into different segments of the show. So awkward stop here. Let's talk about why you should like this video if you're watching right now and subscribe. If you're watching on YouTube, yeah, hit that subscribe button. Leave a comment down below. Let me know your thoughts. Say hello to Raul. Welcome him into our wonderful little community of science here. Let us know. Maybe you want to tell me more about carbon dating, something really cool that I don't know. That'd be fun. I would love that type of interaction. But if you're listening on podcast feed, the show is now available basically on any podcast platform that you listen to. We're on Apple Podcasts, we're on Spotify, we're on Google Podcasts, you name it, we are probably there. So please, if you're watching there, rate the episode, give us, you know, little 5 stars, rate the podcast, leave a good review. That really helps out. And you know, like if you wanted to just like listen, like just like have your computer on listening to the episodes on infinite loop, you know, that'd be cool too. You know, anything, you know, just to help me out, you know, you don't have to do that one. I don't know if I'm legally allowed to request that from you. So just don't do it. I'm winking for you audio only listeners. All right. So thank you for watching. Please do all those things, really helps us out. And I just, you know, I want our community to grow at the end of the day. I just want it to grow a little bit. I love talking about science with you guys. It's a lot of fun. But you know what else is fun? Trees. Particularly synthetic trees that could tap underwater or underground water. I was going to say underwater ground.
Underwater ground.
But guys, if you put a narrow straw in a glass of water, and this is coming from Science News, by the way, and they're saying if you put a narrow straw in a glass of water, some of that fluid will climb up the tube. Which I thought about that when I was reading this, and I was like, yeah, I guess it does kind of go up the straw a little bit, not too much. Just like the article says, without help, that water will climb only a small distance. But now researchers have come up with a device that can mimic trees' ability to make water climb great heights that could bring drinking water to communities that don't have enough. Described as a synthetic tree, this new device could help people more easily tap into groundwater, scientists say, and it might also let people in coastal areas mine fresh drinking water from the sea, which is particularly cool. Let's get into it just a little bit here. It says water molecules find each other really attractive, just like me and Raul.
That's right.
Yeah, same thing, just like people, you know? And that's why large numbers of them come together to form round droplets. And sometimes, however, water molecules are more attracted to other substances than themselves. And that's why they climb up the sides of glass. And it says here in the parentheses, did you ever notice that the surface of the water in a glass curves upward where it meets the side of the glass? I did. I always, you know, just like attributed that to regular surface tension of the water, but I guess that makes sense. The water not just clumping together, the water clumping to the side of the glass. That's pretty cool, especially more so as it's stating here. Well, in a very narrow tube, water can even climb a few centimeters, a couple of inches or so. Okay, I know what centimeters is, guy. All right, you don't have to. Come on, we're all about the metric system here on this show. that's super cool, super awesome, and I love the premise of using technology to help communities in need, especially when it comes to drinking water. So before I ramble on any further, I'm going to throw it back to you, Raul. What did you think of this story? Did you learn anything new reading along?
So, this one, you know, learn anything new. I don't know if I can say learn anything new.
Okay.
But I was reminded that the xylem is a thing, and I forgot about that a long time ago. So when I was reading this, I was like, what's the xylem? And we, of course, this article is just fantastic because it gives you a definitions of like stuff that is provided here for people like me who don't really know these fancy terms. I think it would be the same thing if you take a, what's it called, science person and tell them about how to do a dolly zoom or you know, a tracking shot. They're not going to know what that is, right? So I'm glad that they put some definitions at the end. So I learned, I was retaught the xylem, but this is interesting. This is just a painful reminder, like it says there, that 2.1 billion people do not have access to safe, clean water, which is an absolute tragedy, and it's just something that's, it's ridiculous to just all these times. Just so much time on this earth that we still have not found a way to provide safe, clean, drinkable water to everybody on this planet. And just, but hopefully this helps, because this is a really big thing. This really could help provide water to those, especially those on the coast, coastal cities. So it's just, like I said, it's just another painful reminder of how just we've restricted access to clean drinkable water to so many people.
Yeah, you know, it's a really, I think, an important cause, and I love that you brought up xylems and, you know, learning these new terms. So I mean, to get just to like touch on that a little bit, you know, I talked about how, you know, water can move up a few centimeters in a narrow tube, as the article states, and that's something called capillary action. But it's not enough to move the water more than a few centimeters. It needs help. And that's where this thing called xylems comes into place, because plants know the secret. And when water evaporates out of plants' leaves, it creates this suction inside of a tissue called the xylem. And that suction pulls water and nutrients up through the roots to nourish leaves and new growth. And so the whole... you know, I guess the best way to summarize this synthetic tree without getting too deep into it is that it seems to me like they're trying to recreate that synthetically, make these synthetic leaves that have this type of tissue that reacts the same way, that can create a suction that pulls the water up to the surface, which I think is super cool. Like making technology that simulates nature, it's always, I think, really fascinating for me to see that inspiration. One example that immediately pops to my head is there's actually like solar farms out there, you know, obviously like where like solar panels are, you know, in out in big fields to generate electricity from sunlight. There's like solar farms out there that mimic the pattern of sunflowers, because sunflowers are always, you know, pointing towards like the sun, and they have a certain shape to them that like allows the sun to hit, you know, the surface area of the flower much more efficiently. And then being able to take that kind of design and work it towards solar panels, that way sunlight is always hitting solar panels as efficiently as possible on day-to-day business to generate as much electricity as possible. It's like a very similar concept to me, where it's like, wow, like what does nature do, and why does it do it so well? How can we mimic that to, you know, do something really great? So yeah, I think it's one of those stories that we, you know, we cover on the show. I love seeing science and technology applied to help people in need. Raul, do you have anything else to add to that?
I also found it really interesting how, like, they were talking about, like, the reduced need for energy. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, that you would think that it would need so much energy, like, to heat that water. But, you know, it's actually showing that, like, no, we just need a reduced amount of it. Like, we don't need too much. It really just, once again, just shows how fascinating it is, how much, like, energy we need. like I said, bro, I don't know much about this stuff. So, you know, I read this. Did I really understand it? Nope. But I'm here to do what I got to do to make sure that I'm a good guest. So I read what I could understand, but I found that interesting. And yes, you know, how like the thing would also help to prevent salt crystals and stuff. And, you know, that was really, really interesting too.
Yeah, for sure. You know, they even talk about spraying a coating of graphite on mm-hmm. to the synthetic leaf to increase how much it heats up in sunlight or like under a lamp or wherever you're using this device, which kind of like goes back to, you know, what you touched on a little bit. It's super cool technology. I would love to learn more. I'm probably going to read up more about this because this is a great article that definitely like hits all the key notes. But I'm like, as an engineer now, and this was, I think, in part designed by a mechanical engineer as well, that she grew up in a small coastal village in Africa and today works at Virginia Tech. And, you know, so, you know, obviously there are villages in Africa who have challenges getting clean drinking water. Like you mentioned, I believe, the 2.2 billion people worldwide that lack reliable access to clean drinking water. So it's always, I think, such a bright spot in science to see people use science to help their communities and similar communities that they're, you know, originally from, and giving back to the world in general. Super, super interesting. So yeah, really great story, guys. Check that one out. And yeah, I don't know. I'm stumbling a bit here, Raul. I'm gonna be honest with you. I'm a little tired. I did not have my morning coffee, but
go back to that Farts in Space article that you brought up along that
time. Farts in Space.
Why didn't you give me that one, bro? Like,
there was a farts. I don't think it was a Farts in Space article.
Wait, no, I don't remember what it was. It was something about a fart or like, but I remember that episode. So I did see this really interesting video of this astronaut up in space. I think he was working with like the SpaceX stuff. So like you could see the Earth. It's fascinating. That stuff is fascinating to me.
Yeah. It is. I agree. Space is fascinating, guys. And synthetic trees are cool. And we might even have to rewrite the history books. It's been one heck of a show, but it's not quite over yet. We do have a special segment before we wrap up here today. I'm going to try to go with more like fun special segments like this. You know, typically I try to tie them into articles that I find online, but sometimes it's fun to just do something a bit silly. So this is something silly. It is the periodic table of lies. And I'm going to say some. So Raul, I'm going to mention I have five elements here.
Yeah.
And I'm going to say them, and I want you to tell me if it's a real periodic element, you know, an element on the periodic table, or if it's something fake. Okay.
All right. This is going to be either the worst or the best. And I'm going to surprise you, or I'm just going to further prove my point. And I don't know crap about this.
All right. The first element I'm going to say is beryllium.
That is a real element. Yes.
Yes, that is a real element. Beryllium is a chemical element with the symbol Be, and his atomic number. Do you know the atomic number, Raul?
Hell no, I don't know the atomic number.
It is atomic number 4. It is a steel gray, strong, lightweight, and brittle alkaline earth metal. And
by the way, hands are up. Yeah. I'm not searching up anything. Okay?
Hands up, everybody. Hands up.
Hands up.
No, I believe you. I believe you. So yeah, beryllium. Nice job. Okay, you're one for one so far. So yeah, I wrote down, I like kind of like took the first paragraph of the Wikipedia summary just so we could all like, you know, learn a little bit more about each element that we talk about here today. All right. The next element is viridium.
Viridium. That is real. That is a real element. Yes.
I'm sorry, it is not an element on the periodic table. Viridium is a fictional substance from Star Trek. It was a substance with a variety of uses, primarily to manufacture explosives, and it has a half-life of less than 70 hours.
One for one.
Less than 70 hours. It was also featured in Star Trek VI, The Undiscovered Country, where Spock puts a viridium patch on the back of Captain Kirk as like a tracking device so that he can rescue him.
Here's a fun fact for you, Brandon. I've never seen the Star Trek films.
Oh, you got to check it out, man. You got to check it out. I don't know. Like, I would say start off with the J.J. Abrams movies. You know, they're a little more action, like higher energy. And then once you like get sucked in from like the action, and then you like start to enjoy the lore of everything, then I think you can go back and watch the originals with an appreciation for that lore and wanting to know where it comes from and revisit these characters, obviously played by the original actors. I'm just saying, if you're like hesitant to start out with Star Trek, that is the approach I would suggest. But let's move on to our next element. Ilenium. Real or fake?
You gotta be kidding me, man. You really do. Like, this is just Ilenium. This is, yeah, I'm gonna say it's a real one. I'm gonna say it's a real one.
No, I'm sorry. It's you another fake element.
Man, I'm telling you, dude. I don't know this stuff.
Ilenium is a star system in Star Wars, home of the resistance-based planet of Dakar in The Force Awakens and in the opening scene of The Last
Jedi. I'm not in
the
Schmodown. I don't know these things.
I said this one to Sabrina. She immediately knew it. She even like quoted the movie in like Daisy Ridley's accent. She's like, the Ilenium system. Yes, the Ilenium system.
Yeah.
That's okay. You're gonna. You're 1 for 3 so far, I believe.
Yep, 1 for 3, right, bro.
All right, let's move on to number 4. Let's move on to number 4. Chromium.
That is a real one. Yes, that is a real one.
Yes, chromium is a real element. Is a chemical element. Do you know the symbol for chromium?
Cr.
Yes, and the atomic number.
Hell no, I don't know the atomic number.
Atomic number of 24. It is the first element in group 6. It is a steely gray, lustrous, hard, and brittle transition metal. Chromium is the main additive in stainless steel, to which it adds anti-corrosive properties. Chromium is also highly valued as a metal that is able to be highly polished while resisting tarnishing. Polished chromium.
You
want to
know how I remember this?
How do you remember this?
I think there's a Pokemon that's kind of named, what's it called, around this this name.
That's funny.
Yeah, that's how I remember. Because I was like, wait, that sounds like that Pokemon in the game. And it's called, I think they're actually a metal type Pokemon too.
There you go. Well, you know, polished chromium, are they reflective? Because it reflects almost 70% of the visible spectrum and almost 90% of infrared light, and the name of the element is derived from the Greek word chroma, meaning color, because many chromium compounds are intensely colored. Interesting. I didn't know that part. Alrighty, last element here today, Raul. How you feeling? You're 2-2. You need to come home with the victory.
All right.
Is this a real element or not? Krypton.
You gave it too easy to me, bro. You gave it too easy to me, bro. No, that's not a that's a planet in Superman.
It is Superman's homeworld, but it is also an element on the periodic table. Yeah. No, Raul. Sorry. Sorry that I had to trick you there. I had to trick you.
Come on, man. Come on. You can't just... Is this the first one you do? The first game you do?
Yeah, this is the first time we've ever played this game on the show.
Oh, I'm just setting a terrible precedence for this game.
You didn't do horrible, but you know, let's learn a little bit more about Krypton, the real world version of Krypton. It's derived from ancient Greek, kryptos, which apparently means the hidden one, which sounds very ominous to me. It is a chemical element with the symbol. Do you know the symbol before I say it, Raul?
KR?
Correct. There you go. Yeah. KR.
Don't ask the atomic number. Don't
Come on. Give me the atomic number.
You want me to give you an estimate?
Throw a number out there and let's see how the universe favors you today.
25.
Oh, not a bad guess, but it is number 36. If you added one to each digit, you would have gotten there.
Yeah.
It is a colorless, odorless, tasteless, noble gas that occurs in trace amounts in the atmosphere and is often used with other rare gases in fluorescent lamps. With rare exceptions, Krypton is chemically inert. Well, there you have it, guys. The periodic table of lies. Raul, you didn't do too bad. You were in 2 for 5. That's a 400 batting average. You would be in the Hall of Fame of Major League Baseball if that were the case.
And 2 out of 5, bro. That's a 40. That's a 40. What's it called? That's a 40%, bro. Come on.
That's not bad. It's not bad. Guys, let us know in the comment section below if you played along. How did you do? Did you fare better than Raul? Did you do the same? Did you do worse? It's okay because now we all know a couple facts about real science and then a couple facts about Star Wars and Star Trek. So overall, not a bad day. Not a bad day. This was a super fun episode. Like I said, I did not have my morning coffee today, guys. You know, it's been a struggle, but I think we had fun today, Raul. Would you agree?
Yeah. I got to, what's it called? This absolutely solidify it for you that this is probably the one and only time I'll be on this show.
No, I think I would love to have you back on this show.
I'm perfect for Brandon Hanna Live, Brandon, but not what's it called? Not this one. I don't know at all what's going on.
I disagree. I thought you brought some very great insight, perspective, opinions on a lot of the stuff that we talked about here today, and I appreciated having you on.
Well, if you start doing a show about history, let me know. I'll join you for that.
If I find a nice juicy history story to cover on this show, I'll definitely bring you back on. Yeah. But before that happens, if people want to find you in the meantime, support what you're up to these days, where can they find you? What do you need to plug? Let the people know.
Well, as always, you can interact with me on Twitter, Instagram, Letterboxd, any of that wonderful stuff that you find yourself on at The Nerdy Chicano. And on twitch.tv/TheNerdyChicano, on YouTube under my real name, Raul Alejandro Mendoza, because I don't have a custom URL yet because I'm not at 100 subs. So you guys can go probably help me out there, help me get to 100 subs. But most importantly, you can go to Before I Leave Film on Instagram. Some ground is moving. We are just in the final touches that we need to do to finish up this movie. Because we're working really hard. But I also podcast and do some writing over at the Nerdcore, at the Nerdcore _ on Twitter, at the Nerdcore on Instagram, and on podcast platforms, wherever you can find it, the Nerdcore, CORPS, along with YouTube and Twitch, same thing, the Nerdcore. So go and check that out, y'all. And that's all I pretty much do these days. I'm getting ready to cover Nashville Film Festival in a couple of weeks, next week, I think. So I'm just going to watch a bunch of movies and review them. But yeah, man, that's my bread and butter. I know cinema. I know cinema. What's going on? Cinema history and, maybe some things about space, but not this science stuff.
You're like, that's all that I'm up to, you know, lately. Like, yeah, that's about it. And you're just like, oh, I'm only like reviewing movies, making a movie, running the Nerdcore. Like, you know, that's all I'm up to these days.
Yeah,
that's a lot, man.
Most of my day is taken up by my work. So,
You're crushing it, man. So thank you so much for being on. I'm, of course, your host, Brandon Hanna. You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at BrandonHanna07. If you're watching right now on YouTube, you've already found me at youtube.com/BrandonHanna, where you can obviously find the video component of this show and some of the other short form content that I like to produce with my good Muppet friend. Can I legally say Muppet, fuzzy puppet friend, Ralph? So if you're, I'm working on a lot of fun videos like that. If you're into that, head on over to YouTube, hit that subscribe button, little notification bell so you don't miss a thing, and hit that like button. Leave a comment down below because I want to have conversations with you guys about science. That's what this is all about. But if it's the other way around, maybe you need to find an audio feed. Maybe you want to listen to this in the car while you're at work. Maybe while you're like doing some household chores, you want to hear me and Raul, mostly me, ramble on about science awkwardly. Then you could do that anywhere podcasts are sold. You know, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, you name it. I am there. Please follow along on podcast platform. Rate and review this show on there. I cannot emphasize how much that really helps me out and helps support this show and helps the show keep going. And if you want to go above and beyond to help the show, I do have a Patreon, patreon.com/BrandonHanna. I don't offer much, but any bit of support that you're willing to offer is so appreciated. It really, really goes a long way, guys. So check that out. And, you know, as they say, see which tier is right for you. And with all that being said, I think that's all to be said. So I will say, as always, guys, thank you for watching. Thank you to Raul for being on the show once again. And thank you all for taking time out of your day.